Hare Krishna. First, I'd like to thank Maharaj for allowing me to come today with all of the devotees here. I told him that whatever he said... I shouldn't speak, Mar. See, that's what happened. I told him if he said anything nice about me, that I would say 10 times as much about him. But is all we have to do is look into the crowd of devotees here, over 1,000 devotees here, and I think that speaks very much for all that Maharaj has done. So I'll let it go at that. Make sure that you're comfortable. His description of what happened in New Vrindavan was accurate. I was actually feeling a lot of jealousy and envy towards my god brothers and god sisters in New Vrindavan at that time. And the reason was is that a few months before, when I had received Brahman initiation from Srila Prabhupada in New Dwarka, I was there for 1 week. We drove at that time, just like we had this caravan today. In the U.S., that's what we would do wherever Prabhupada would go. So his main points, of course, were Los Angeles and New York. And at that time, he went to Los Angeles. So we had a caravan of vans. They had no windows, cargo vans. And we traveled across country, which was 3,000 miles. So that's about 5,000 kilometers, I guess, in these vans. But there was no difficulty in sitting in the back of one of these vans for 5 days, 6 days, 7 days, whatever it took, because we were going to see Srila Prabhupada. So I had that opportunity. Maybe I should start at the beginning a little bit. I'll give you some background. I came to Krishna consciousness in April of 1971, and it was from Philadelphia, so that's where I entered the temple in Philadelphia, although I've never lived in the temple in Philadelphia. I went there every day for a week, and Kirtananda Maharaj, he was passing through at that time, and he was a very exciting, very dynamic preacher, and myself and a god brother of mine, my friend, we became attracted, so we wound up within a few weeks, we went from Pittsburgh and then right into New Vrindavan. So I became Kirtananda's kind of personal assistant. In the very early days, he would travel in a van. He was preaching, always traveling from one college to the next, preaching in colleges and high schools. So I was a servant at that time. Anyway, Prabhupada first came. I met Prabhupada first time in July of 1971. 1971, yes. And that's when I received first initiation. And my very first meeting with Prabhupada wasn't average. It was also distinctive. So I guess I was destined to have more time with Prabhupada. But there in New York Temple, which was on Henry Street, the temple room was not very big, but it was packed, of course, with hundreds of devotees who would have traveled from all the nearby temples to be near Srila Prabhupada and to get initiation. At that time, they were doing like 10 initiates every day. This was in July. So every day, there would be a fire sacrifice. And, of course, we had to make our japa beads. We had to string our neck beads. They were all beads that were bought at the local bead shop. And we would do that downstairs days before. We would make preparation. And Prabhupada would chant on those beads. It was still being done. He would chant on each bead, so the fire sacrifice would go on and Prabhupada would be chanting. And the day I received initiation, it was a little before that, a few days before, I had my first encounter with my spiritual master. And it was in the temple, and it was in the evening. Sundar Artik was going on, and Prabhupada was there in the temple room. And again, it's just like we have this big crowd here. There's hundreds of devotees in the temple room, so everyone was standing up during kirtan. So at the end of kirtan, of course, Prabhupada began the prayers. So everyone got down on their hands and knees and offered obeisances. Of course, you're familiar in a temple room, when you do that, it becomes very crowded because you take up a lot more space when you get down and offer obeisances. And I was right next to Prabhupada's Vyasasan because I was with Kirtanananda Maharaj. So because I was his servant, I was always got to be near Srila Prabhupada. It was from the beginning I had a special mercy. But what happened when we were all offering obeisances, and this was the summer, July 1971, it was very, very hot. New York City, very hot in the summer. So it was near 100 degrees and very humid, and everyone's sweating, stuffy room. And we're all down. And I was a little quicker than many people when I would say my prayers a little quickly. I do things sometimes a little too quick. So I had offered obeisances, and I was also very eager to see Prabhupada. So I offered, I went down, and I was saying my prayers, Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sai Bhutvesha Madhava. Then I finished, and I began to sit up and look at Prabhupada. But the person behind me, he was still offering obeisances. So as soon as I sat up, I sat on his head. And he was not at all happy. He didn't consider it any kind of a benediction. Bhakta Vin was sitting on his head. So he pushed his head up to get rid of me. And he did. But when he pushed his head up against the back of me, I lunged right onto Srila Prabhupada's Vyasasan. Prabhupada was sitting like this, and I was right there. So I came right across Prabhupada and right across his lap. Naturally, my heart stopped beating. And Prabhupada wasn't very happy with me coming across. So I was lying across and I just looked up. So that was my first encounter with Prabhupada. And he just looked at me and said, "What is the difficulty?" I would hear that phrase from him many times in the next few years when I would do something wrong. And he would say, "What is the difficulty?" So that was his very first statement to me. And also very interesting, because we can understand sometimes the spiritual master, you know, you may have just one meeting with him, and he'll say one thing to you, and it may seem like a very simple statement, but sometimes it can be quite profound. For me, of course, this is a very profound statement I think of all the time. What is the difficulty? Krishna consciousness, just like we see here, it's not difficult, right? We chant, we feast on prasadam, little philosophy. It's a very simple process. And the Prabhupada would say that. What is the difficulty? So with me, he was very emphatic about that. He said, I have my wife. She's here. She has one son, Atmarama. And one morning walk. It was 1975 in Hawaii, New Navadvip. That's where we currently are living now, in New Navadvip. She's temple president there. You met her in Mumbai, Kusa. And she had this little baby, Atmarama. At the time, he was not even 1 year old. She had him wrapped up in a little blanket. Even in Hawaii, there's a breeze by the ocean. So. And she was on the morning walk. And she was very fortunate at that time as well. She got a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was walking on the beach Ala Moana Beach Park, where he used to walk very often when he was in Hawaii. And that's the place where he looked at the surfers. You know, everyone knows the surfers, and Prabhupada said, sufferers, he called them. He said in their next life they will become fish in the water there. So he was walking, and as he would often do, Prabhupada would walk. Sometimes he would chant, and he would have his cane in his left hand, and sometimes he would stop and talk. It was always nice when Prabhupada would be walking on the morning walk. He had such momentum. Prabhupada walked so quickly, not slow, very quick walking. And of course the devotees would always keep up. And then Prabhupada would stop very abruptly. We always had to be very conscious of everything. He acted so freely, everything he did. You know, there was, you just never knew what might happen next. So you had to be very aware of Prabhupada's movements and his speech, everything he was doing. So many things. So anyway, he stopped like that once and he was talking. And as he would talk, he would look around the devotees on the walk. And he looked at my wife, and he looked at her carrying this baby, little baby. And he said to her, "Can he walk?" It's just like this big. She said, "Oh no, Prabhupada, he's just so many months old." And Prabhupada just said, "Okay. Because if he can walk, he should walk." And now... A very simple statement. Now he's 30 years old and she's still carrying. You understand?
Yeah.
Still taking care. So it was for her, it was a very instruction that she still tries to follow. Because sometimes you have to let your children grow up. You can no longer take care of them. You know, you have to let them fall down, make their mistakes. You can't correct their lives for them. So anyway, it's an instruction. For her, it was the most profound thing Prabhupada said, that she's still trying to learn. So in that same way, I'm also trying to understand, what is the difficulty? It's not so... We make it difficult. And Prabhupada always said, Krishna consciousness, it's easy for the simple, and difficult for the crooked. So if we're crooked, then it becomes a difficult thing. So that was my first encounter, and so I just went back down. Of course, I didn't say anything to Prabhupada, which also became my pattern when Prabhupada, I was with him for, as he said, almost 3 years. And whenever he would chastise me, and sometimes he would say, "Why do you do this? Why do you do that? Why are you such a malecha?" He would call me sometimes, "Malecha." And I would just go... I don't know. I never had an answer for him. But it's something I learned also as well as while I was a servant. And if you had an answer, it was never the right answer. And I wanted Prabhupada to minimize the chastisement because I really didn't, at the time, I didn't appreciate getting chastised. No, even I was wrong, for Prabhupada to yell at me was very difficult. You know, so... The best way to minimize was just not to say anything. Because whatever you said, Prabhupada saw that as argumentative. Because there is no reason. If he says you did something wrong, you did something wrong. There's no question that you could make it seem all right. So I wouldn't respond. So then sometimes it would stop. But the next time... Next official meeting was my initiation, first initiation, which was also very exciting at those times. Again, every day, 10 devotees were getting first initiation. And I was initiated. Also, customary sometimes, you would see, you know, a boy's name was Bob, his initiated name may be Balaram. You know, there was always sometimes this... first letter that was consistent with me, that didn't happen, but I was, many others were initiated at that time, of Shruti Dev, and there was Kirti Raj, Shruti, I was, of course, Shruta Kirti, And so like that. And I remember going up, and Prabhupada, of course, said, so what are the regulative principles? And it may be surprising, for us it wasn't surprising, but so many times I remember sitting waiting for my name to be called, and you would just sit there and you would be going over in your head what were the regulative principles so that when you were before him you wouldn't forget. Not that you didn't remember, but just being in Prabhupada's presence, you couldn't remember anything. You couldn't remember your own name. I'll tell that story a little later. But so he called me, so he asked me, so I managed to remember them. And I said them, and he said, so, and how many rounds do you chant? And I said, well, puffed up, I said, I'm chanting 20 a day, Srila Prabhupada. And he went, He was not at all impressed. I guess one time, one devotee here in Vrindavan, during Kartik, you know, many times in Kartik we say devotees like to chant 64 rounds if you can. It's a very nice activity. So one day a devotee who was chanting his rounds, Prabhupada was there, and he came up and he said, Prabhupada, I chanted 64 rounds today. Prabhupada said, then what did you do? You cannot impress your spiritual master in such a way. Here in Vrindavan, we know in the building of Krishna Balaram Temple, there were many devotees were contributing so much Lakshmi to help the building of the temple. And one devotee, he gave Prabhupada a big presentation. It was $108,000, right? Like 108 lakhs, like that. $108,000 and he presented. Prabhupada just put it there. Didn't even look. And he said, you could have given 109. Humility is always required. We have to learn how to become very humble before the spiritual master. So in the same way, I said, I'm chanting 20 rounds. I'm chanting. And then he said, so my name was Vin, Bhakta Vin. So he said, all right, and he handed me beads, and he said, your name is Shruta Kirti. And of course, everyone just sitting, we don't even understand all these Sanskrit words. I remember in New Vrindavan, we used to read in Bahulaban and in the barn, we would read Krishna book. And it would just come out just a month before, the first volume of Krishna book, big, big book. And we would be reading, and every word we would come over, you know, stumble over every word, you know, all the demons. Every Sanskrit word, we would just spend so much time. So he said, your name is Shruta Kirti. He said, is the name of Krishna. It means one whose activities are world famous. And all the devotees went, ooh, you know, ah. And Prabhupada said, and you are Shruta Kirti Das. So then I went back to my seat, sat down, and a friend said to me, what's your name? I said, I don't know. I said, Shruta something. They would, outside of Prabhupada's door, they would pin the list of your name, your Karmi name, and so you would go and write it down. Put it in your bead bag so you would study your name. As he said, this is just everything, you know, everything being said, it just shows just what Srila Prabhupada did, you know, with absolute, he said, he called himself a monkey. We were a bunch of monkeys in the United States. We were just a bunch of fools and rascals. As Prabhupada said, so much intoxication. He said to me once in New Dwarka, I was alone with him in the room, and he was walking around, and he was looking out his windows and just watching, and he was thinking, I don't know, who knows what goes on in the mind of Srila Prabhupada, and he said, so much intoxication, he said, so much illicit sex, said, you Westerners, said, if it not for the chanting of Hare Krishna, he said, you couldn't have accomplished anything, and so much was going on, so many things were going on. Of course, it was only by Prabhupada's chanting that everything was going on. Or actually, for myself, I can speak just nonsense. And so many will say the same thing. We were doing incredible things, but it was only due to Srila Prabhupada's presence on the planet. Even we were following, we weren't following. Sometimes people were chanting. Sometimes they just felt too busy to chant. Once there was one time, devotees, they were complaining. They said that the local leader, he wasn't chanting his rounds. And they were saying, how can we follow him as an authority if he's not chanting his 16 rounds? He said, and I know for a fact he's not chanting 16 rounds. And Prabhupada said, Arjuna wasn't chanting 16 rounds. He said he was fighting a great war. He said he had no time to chant his 16 rounds. He said, anyway, you should see it like that. Not that Prabhupada encouraged not to chant 16 rounds, but he said, you should see it like that and encourage him to chant his rounds and follow. Of course, another time, it was in India, there was one sannyasi, he was also managing the temple. And the devotees, they came in and said the same thing. He's not chanting his 16 rounds. And Srila Prabhupada said, then what good is everything he's doing if he's not chanting his rounds? He say, he may be the best administrator. He may do everything expertly, but if he's not chanting his rounds, then what is the use of all his activities? Prabhupada always stressed very much the simple things, simple formula he gave us. And again, I heard from his lotus mouth so many times, he said, if you just chant 16 rounds and you follow the four regulative principles, he said, without a doubt, at the end of this life, you go back home, back to Godhead. And he said, what is the difficulty? A very simple formula. But he said that he could see how fallen we were. His Western disciples, that is American and European disciples, and yet so much was going on, all by Prabhupada's chanting and by his desire, his amazing desire that Prabhupada had to spread Krishna consciousness, and he had such a formula, which it's still every day that goes by, I see how Prabhupada just saw his Prabhupada's vision was just amazing. You know, I was just seeing things as they were going on one day at a time, not even understanding that much. But Prabhupada would come, like when he came in 1972, when he came back to India in 1973 in Mayapur. Remember when the first guest house was built? And I thought it was finished. That was Mayapur. I thought the project was done. You know, and Prabhupada would just look out across. He loved Mayapur so much. I remember when the guest house was done. And there was another thing Srila Prabhupada always did when he took care of his disciples so well. Just like here, we have so many arrangements we can see that Maharaj is making. We have an ambulance here if anyone gets ill. just everything is there. Prasadam is there. Nice place to stay is there for everyone. And Prabhupada was like that with his disciples when they came to India. He knew his disciples in India were undergoing great austerities in the early years, 1970, 71, 72, 73. And everywhere they were, in Mayapur and Vrindavan, especially in Juhu, they were living right by a swamp. The facility there was, it was just like one big mosquito nest, you know, with malaria, and it was very, very difficult. And Prabhupada didn't tell them not to do it, but he worked very hard. First thing he built everywhere was a guest house. In Vrindavan, he built a guest house first for his disciples. In Mayapur, he built a guest house. In Juhu, he built guest house, guest facilities. Not that he built a temple immediately, but he wanted a place where his disciples could be comfortable. And he always wanted that they had nice prasadam. We'll go on, we can speak more as time goes by. But he always wanted these things for his disciples. So he understood what they were doing. And he appreciated it, and he encouraged it. Austerities, he encouraged it. But at the same time, he always wanted to arrange the best possible facility for them at any one time, because he had appreciation, such love and appreciation. And this is very much what endeared so many of us to Srila Prabhupada, that we would do anything for him, because he was doing everything for us. He would do anything, and he did. He would give himself so much for his disciples. So it was this mood that attracted one and kept one in Krishna consciousness. So we'll go back to New York. So that was my initiation. That was in July of 1971. So then after that, I went back to New Vrindavan, and I was in the road show that had developed. The road show had two parts, two phases. First one was Kirtanananda Swami, and the second one was Vishnu John Swami, and it was quite different. First one was very simple. We'd go to engagements at colleges, high schools, things like that, and he would give a class, a lecture. Sometimes there would be puppet shows, things like that, and then prasadam distribution. We didn't have khichdi and breadsticks. We had what do you call it? The brats and tomato sauce and big breadsticks that were fried in ghee. So it was very popular, distributing this prasadam. It was very, very popular. And there were four buses would be touring like that. So I spent some time on that, and I was the treasurer. And after 6 months, Vishnu John Swami got into the road show, and then I went back to New Vrindavan. And at that time, Kirtanananda Swami, who also had his vision, he started milking cows and cooking in the kitchen. So that's when I began my cooking in the kitchen there in New Vrindavan in the Bahulaban farm. So I remained there, and then the next time I saw Srila Prabhupada was when I received Brahman Brahminical initiation. That was in New Dwarka. So that was that trip, that week-long trip across country to get to New Dwarka. And that's when I started to get some personal association with Srila Prabhupada, and I became attached to Prabhupada in Prabhupada's personal form. I developed some attachment, and I also developed this funny, I used to, his servant at that time, his name was Nanda Kumar. He was just before me. And I always would look at him. Sometimes I wasn't even looking at Prabhupada. I would just look at Nanda Kumar, and I would think, he's Prabhupada's servant. You know, like, what an amazing service to do, to just be Prabhupada's personal servant, to cook for him, to massage for him, just to be with him all the time. And I didn't think of it in a way like I wanted to be it, but I just marveled at the fact that somebody had such a service. You know, like it seemed like it's just a wonderful service. And Nanda Kumar would kind of look at me, I think, sometimes because he thought maybe I was a little peculiar because I would be looking at him. And he would just give me this glance, and then I would look away. You know, but I was just fascinated by this aspect of being personal servant to Prabhupada. So again, being Kirtanananda's servant, his personal servant, I got to go on all the morning walks, even though I never did Sankirtan book distribution. I wasn't a temple administrator, but I just hung on to Kirtanananda's, you know, hung on to him, so I got to go on all these things. So I definitely was very, very fortunate. And at the same time, in the afternoon, Prabhupada would go into the garden in New Dwarka. If you ever have the opportunity, there's another great place of pilgrimage is to go to the New Dwarka community and go into Prabhupada's garden in New Dwarka. Prabhupada's times, one time he said that was his favorite place in the whole world, that garden in New Dwarka. It was just a small, maybe 20 by 20 feet by 20 feet place, but it was very, very nice and decorated very nicely by one family. And of course he said it was his favorite place because they had many Tulsi plants. Vrindadevi was in there, so he said this was Vrindavan. So to him, when he was in New Dwarka, he would sit in there, and Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, just as he said he carried Vrindavan with him. But there he felt especially happy, he was in Vrindavan. So in the afternoons, another thing, Prabhupada was always very regulated. Wherever he went, Prabhupada followed his schedule. And it didn't matter if he traveled halfway around the world and the time would change 6 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours. As soon as he would get to the next temple, his watch would be set and he started following that program. So immediately, morning walk was whatever, 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, depending on the sun coming up. He'd go right into class, his lunch, everything. He would never hesitate to change one thing. And for some of us who traveled with him, sometimes that was difficult. As we say, you hear so much, you know, we hear sometimes devotees in traveling and talk of jet lag and say, well, you know, just take a day, you know, tomorrow we'll start. And Prabhupada, you could not say that to Prabhupada, that I don't have to take rest, of jet lag. Prabhupada wouldn't accept such a statement. So, he would immediately get into that schedule wherever he was. And very regulated Prabhupada's schedule was at this, while I was with him. And we can start in early morning, of course. Prabhupada could get up at any time. He'd go to bed usually around anywhere from 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 11:30, maybe sometimes 9:30. And at that time he would get a leg massage. The servant would give him a massage. And then he might get up 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock and do some translating. And then maybe he'd chant some and do a little more translating, because that time of the morning was very, very quiet, very peaceful. As Prabhupada said, his translating work was his most important business and required great meditation. You could see on Srila Prabhupada, we think these books just came, you know. Sometimes devotees think Prabhupada was a pure devotee, everything was just automatic and it happened. Prabhupada worked so hard to give us everything he gave us, but especially his books. He would translate when he was doing Bhagavatam, he would have his, there was one Bhagavatam, it was a black cover and it was just all the verses in Sanskrit. Then there was another one that had translations by Sridhar Swami, this was hundreds of years ago, Sridhar Swami. And he would have that, and he had another commentary, so he had his commentary. He had two or three commentaries. So he would go over the Sanskrit, and he had the dictaphone machine that he would use. And you could hear him. Prabhupada had a very deep voice. And as all he used was a little light on his table. No big room lights, so he just had one light right over his books. And Prabhupada would just sit in a simple, on the floor, on asana with what we called coffee tables. They were his desks, just the floor desk. And everywhere he went, that was how he did his translation work. And it was just such meditative activity for Prabhupada. He would go over and he would look at the different commentaries, and you could hear him sometimes, because I was always just right next door, in the room next door. So sometimes I would wake up when I heard his voice. Usually it would just fall back asleep. But sometimes I would just sit there and I would just lie and just listen to Prabhupada as he would go, and he would say something, and then he would click it back and rewind maybe, and he would listen to what he had just said. And if he didn't like it, he would rewind again and record over it again. and then he would do purport. So in this way, he was doing every day, you know, every day, 2-3 hours every morning, 2-3 hours, 4 hours. But maybe at 4 hours would get you 45 minutes or 1 hour of actual talking on a tape. So he said it was... And that was the other side of it. And Prabhupada read his own books. You know, many devotees you can ask, and they would... We all marveled at how Prabhupada read his books. And he read them as if he wasn't the author. And he said that. He actually said once he was on a plane, myself and Prajumna were there, and Prabhupada was reading Bhagavad Gita, as it is. And he was reading, and he stopped, and he looked at Prajumna, and he said, how many people, how many authors do you know read their own books? Of course, Prajumna said. And Prabhupada said, no author. No, once an author, once someone writes a book, it's done. Never goes back and reads his book. It's does not interested. It was his work. It's done. He said, and yet I am reading this. He said, because these are not my words. So these are Krishna's words. So this was, Prabhupada said again and again, these books, they're coming directly from Krishna. And that's why it's so important to talk of book distribution. Prabhupada say you distribute books. What can you say to someone in your 15 minutes, your 20 minutes? He would say, you give them a book. He said, if they read one book. Once he called me in his room, or I was in his room, cleaning. Sometimes I would go in and clean. Happened three different times, three different books, three different times. The same thing he said to me. Once he was reading Nectar of Devotion, 1973. Nectar of Devotion, he was reading, just sitting there reading, just in ecstasy reading. And he said, he looked at me. He said, if you just read this one book, he said, you can just understand this one book, he said, you'll become Krishna conscious. And he just continued to read. So three times. Once I went in, it was Bhagavad Gita. Once I went in, it was Krishna book. And he said, if you just read this one book... He knew I wasn't reading. He kept encouraging me, just read this one book. He would, I think he was trying to find which book it was that maybe I would read. You know, he said, just read this one book, he said. And then he would say, if you just understand this one page... You know, he would say that. Just one sentence, if you can read it and understand, become Krishna conscious. So this is how important, this is what Prabhupada gave us. Besides everything else, these books of his are so very valuable, you know, for everyone. And when the book distributors would go into his room, Vaisheshika was telling us yesterday, when he saw Prabhupada in Berkeley, at a devotee's house he was staying at. And all the book distributors were there. So they were looking for some words of encouragement. And Prabhupada said, these books are not just to distribute. They're for you to read. And see, this was always the balance. Prabhupada always created balance, because we can see sometimes devotees, whatever their particular service is, I think that's everything. I mean, we get into a bubble. We do our service. But he always had that balance. So with the book distributors, they were on the front lines, and they loved it because they were getting so much ecstasy distributing Prabhupada's books. They were feeling all the time. But then Prabhupada said, you also must read the books. I mean, that's why we're distributing, so other people read them. He said, but you also read. They're for you, to help you become Krishna conscious. So where did we get to? Los Angeles. I was in Los Angeles in the garden with Srila Prabhupada. And now, somehow or other, I became the Krishna book reader. Prabhupada, again, he loved that garden. He had a nice little, what's it called, trellis with vines growing. He would be sitting there. And sometimes with Srila Prabhupada, you always had to know when to do what you were supposed to do. You know, never too early, never too late. There was always the proper time. So you didn't begin reading. For me, I started to learn right away. I had the Krishna book. And sometimes he would just chant. And there would be just a small group of devotees, 6 to 10 devotees would be in Prabhupada's garden with him, a small garden. Again, there would be the leaders, GBC, sannyasis, a few Sankirtan devotees, and myself. And Prabhupada would just be chanting. And then you'd have to always be paying attention, because one moment he'd go, and that was it. Just like that. So that meant, okay, now you can read. As I learned later, as his personal servant, Prabhupada always never did anything unnecessarily, never spoke unnecessarily, never said too many words, never said too few, always said just the right amount of words. Never walked too far, too little, everything he did. So as his servant, you would learn so many little things, if hopefully. So sometimes Prabhupada would go like that. So depending on the time of the day, if you went like that, turn on the light, or it could mean turn on the fan. But you began to learn. So this was what it was like to be with Srila Prabhupada. I just recently have really began to understand this personal servant, and it was strictly I was personal servant. I didn't do any business. I didn't arrange his ticketing for flying. That was secretary. That was secretary's job. I cooked for him. I massaged him. I sat outside his room and waited for the bell to ring. And I began to realize basically a personal servant meant I was Prabhupada's pujari. You know, mm-hmm. Prabhupada was, he was my deity. I mean, he was living, just like deity, of course, is there. Krishna is there, deity is alive, but Prabhupada was a moving deity, so you had to keep up with him and you had to know what to do. But same thing, I was dressing him sometimes, arranging his clothing, cooking for him, massaging him. So that was my pujari service, was taking care of Prabhupada. So in the garden, finally he would give a little nod. So then I started reading Krishna book. And I was doing that for a day. This went on for about a week. And Prabhupada actually got to know me personally, I guess, a little bit. I got to know Prabhupada a little bit. One day, Kirtanananda brought myself and Kaladri up into Prabhupada's room. This was during that time. Early, very early, first couple of days, and in New Dwarka. It's very special, beautiful quarters we remember there in New Dwarka, probably had white tile floors and blue walls everywhere at that time. Wherever Prabhupada's quarters were, there were blue walls because Prabhupada said he liked blue. So all these walls were painted blue. Saffron curtains and blue walls. And they always, whenever Prabhupada would arrive at the temple, it would always smell of paint because it had always just been painted, right? Almost sometimes it was still wet. So the temples didn't smell like incense. They usually smelled like paint when Prabhupada would come to a temple because it had just been prepared for Prabhupada's arrival. His devotees would be working frantically up night and day. So, Kirtananda brought us into Prabhupada's room, and it was just before his breakfast prasadam, so he was behind the desk. And I remember this, and it was just like Dwarka. That's what it felt like. It was New Dwarka. And you really, you know, that's how I felt when I went into his room. I felt like I went into Prabhupada's quarters in Dwarka. It was like, it was a palace to us. It was just a very simple room, but it seemed like a palace, you know. All the trim was done in gold paint, and the walls were bright blue, and it, curtains were almost an orangish saffron, satin curtains. So it was just like walking into Dwarka, and I felt just like I had just walked in to see Prabhupada. I walked into the spiritual world and I was very, very nervous. And we offered obeisances, and as all I remember is that I was sweating everywhere. My hands, I didn't want to touch his floor because my hands were wet with sweat. So I just sat there, and Kaladri was beside me, my godbrother, Kirtanananda. He was very comfortable around Prabhupada. He had been with him for 7 years. And Prabhupada looked at me and said, what is your name? And I just looked at him. Now this was, I had my name now for 7 months, so as I said, I would forget my name. So 7 months later, he asked me my name, and I just looked at him. And nothing came out of my mouth. And Kirtananda said, that's Shruta Kirti, Srila Prabhupada. And Kuladri and Prabhupada said, ah, nice brahmacharis, he said, nice brahmacharis. And at that time, Nanda Kumar came up with Prabhupada's breakfast prasadam. Generally, breakfast, he would have fruit, whatever seasonal fruit was there where he was, and hot milk or yogurt. And if it was a little cold out, sometimes he might have some halava. The weather was cold. Prabhupada said when it was cold, it increased his appetite. So, and then always some milk sweets. Prabhupada was very fond of rasgulla and sandesh. So then he went and he sat down on the floor, had the little table, which is called choki, in front of him. Just a simple wooden table. He sat down facing the wall. That's how he would take prasadam very often, by himself. And it's what he did over and over when people were in the room, and this is what he did with us. So he sat down and he picked up a piece of fruit, handed it to one. He picked up another piece of fruit and handed it. There you go. Okay. Now you can go. Now you can go. Then he would let us go. And he would take prasadam by himself. And that was another way Prabhupada took prasadam. It was very, very, you could see he was honoring Krishna prasadam. It was not carelessly done. Not something he was standing up or walking around. Or he sat down very quietly. And 99% of the time, whoever was in the room, he'd give him and go. And he would sit down by himself and he would honor Krishna prasadam. So I began at that time in the garden. I was reading Krishna books. And one day, I remember I was going on the morning walk also, so I was getting lots of association with Prabhupada over this 1 week. This is why I became attached and why I became so upset in New Vrindavan. Everything I had gotten was all taken away just like that. Now Prabhupada was there. So one day we went on the morning walk with Prabhupada, and when he came back, we'd come into his room and Prabhupada went up a flight of stairs which led to his room, and he started walking up the stairs. Now imagine, we're all, you know, for the most part we were 18, 19, 20 years old, all children, and also trying to keep up with Prabhupada on the morning walk. He walked very long and very fast usually, but as he was walking up he looked at me and a big smile. And he said, oh, Sutta Goswami. Because of the Krishna book reading. So now Prabhupada even named me Sutta Goswami, he said. And another morning, he was walking up the stairs and he had his cane. And again, he looked at us, all these children around Prabhupada, you know. And he said, and he looked up the stairs, he was halfway up. And he said, when I was young, I would run up the stairs. He said, but now I can't run up the stairs. He said, I still want to run up the stairs. He says, that's the spirit soul. So he's giving instruction. Everything he did, there was instruction to be learned there. It was nice, it was very sweet, but also very informative. As he's saying, he's looking at us and saying, this is going to happen to you too. You're running around now. But he said, but now I can't run up the stairs. But the same desire is there, he said, I want to run up these stairs. So, the next time I got his personal association was in New Vrindavan. So now I was back in New Vrindavan and I was cooking night and day. As Maharaj was saying, that's when I became upset. And I wasn't getting any of Prabhupada's association. And people would come into the kitchen and say, oh, what a lecture this morning. Did you hear that lecture? Here we are. Look where we are here in Vrindavan. We have a sound system. In New Vrindavan, we didn't have anything in 1912. The lecture was up top, so I didn't hear anything. In fact, it was Govardhan Hill, it was called. Prabhupada spoke on Govardhan Hill in New Vrindavan. But I didn't get to hear, so they would say things like that. Prabhupada gave such a nice lecture, did you hear? And I go, no, I'm in the kitchen. So, of course, it was my service, and I did it, joyfully performed for the most part. I was busy. So when we're busy doing service, we're always happy. So I had a little more time, actually. It was the very evening before. It was 9 o'clock at night. I was still in the kitchen. I was in the kitchen from 4:30 in the morning till just about 9 at night. So Kirtananda Swami came in to the kitchen, and he said, "So," he said, "do you want to be Prabhupada's servant?" I said, "Yes, yeah." "So, well, Prabhupada wants you to be his servant," he said. I said, "Oh, okay." And he said, "I told him that you'll be the best servant he ever had." He said, "Because you'll never leave him." And I went, "Oh, okay." And of course, I never thought I would ever leave him. So then I took rest that night, and I had a little suitcase or something. I packed my few belongings. And that morning we went to Madhuban, where Prabhupada stayed in this little old farmhouse. You scraped all the paint off the wall. Just a little tiny place. And of course there was not even a bathroom in there. I don't even know if there was water in there. Probably no water at all, because the well was outside. It was a farmhouse. So that morning, Kirtananda brought me over to see Prabhupada. It was still dark out, and Prabhupada was already sitting at his desk. And now remember, Prabhupada, of course, Prabhupada was familiar with me somewhat. And I remember going in with Kirtananda, just myself and Kirtananda, and hardly any room in this spot. And we went in, offered obeisances, and Kirtananda said, "This is Sruta Kirti, Srila Prabhupada, he's going to be your servant." And Prabhupada just looked and he nodded. Okay. He said, "Okay." And then Kirtananda said, "He cooks very nicely." Prabhupada again nodded. He said, "That's good." He said, "But he doesn't know how to massage." And Prabhupada said, "Anyone can massage." So then Prabhupada stood up and he grabbed his lota and he said, "Follow me." That was his first, this was my first instruction is now on his personal servant. Now this lota, you know, this was 1972. We're American boys and girls. Lota means absolutely nothing to us. But I had heard, when I went into the temple in Pittsburgh in 1971, one of the stories I heard about over and over and over was Srila Prabhupada and his lota in Russia. There was, when Prabhupada was in Russia, what was that, 1970, when he was in Russia, of course, we know that in Russia was, you know, we're talking, as Americans, we all heard this, that everywhere, whatever you wanted, you stood in line. If you wanted milk, you stood in line at the milk store. You wanted vegetables, they were not even vegetables, but you wanted grains, bread, whatever it was, you stood in lines for a long time and hopefully would not run out before you got there. So they wanted to get milk for Srila Prabhupada. So this is a story I'm hearing when I first go into the temple. This is April 1971. Of course, I don't even Prabhupada. None of these things mean a whole lot, you know, but everyone is so excited telling this story. So Prabhupada had a lota when he went to Russia, and his suitcase with him was his lota. Of course, when the lota was in the bathroom, we all know. And there was not even a container to put milk in when they went to the stand to get milk. And they said, "But, you know, that's when I heard utility is the principle." Prabhupada said, "Utility is the principle." So only there was his bathroom lota. So they went to the store, so milk was put into his lota. This was a very popular story in 1971. So now it's 1972, and Prabhupada picked up that lota, and he says, "Follow me." So I walked outside with Srila Prabhupada. It's still dark out. We walked out about 10 feet, and he said, "Wait here." Speaking to me very grave. There was no no relationship here other than master and servant. Now I could tell I was Prabhupada's servant. He was just speaking just quickly, no emotion, just very matter of fact. He said, "Wait here." So then he walked off behind the trees, and I stood there. Then he came back after a few minutes. He goes, "Here." And he hands me his lota. He said, now you can wash it out with dirt and water and bring it back inside. So that was my very first service I did as his personal servant. Service I had done before, reading Krishna book, all these wonderful things. But now my very first service was to clean his lota after Prabhupada had passed in New Vrindavan. So immediately I could understand. I couldn't understand immediately. Now I can understand. Prabhupada immediately was showing me, you're a personal servant. You know? This was my job. So and I did very happily, and I brought it back. And then Prabhupada was very kind, very patient with his personal servant. He had had, I guess Nanda had been with him over a year. So now maybe he sensed I would be with him a little while. So over the course of time, he just began giving me different instructions, showing me how to do very simple things. Showed me how to use the cooker. Showed me how to give a massage the way he wanted. Just little day, he would just show you a little bit. There was never any annoyance in doing it. And you never felt that he was annoyed. Just very comfortably, very nonchalantly, and almost like he enjoyed doing these things. Sometimes he would come into where I was cooking. I generally always cooked in my room. It was one of the first instructions Prabhupada gave me. When we got to New Dwarka, Los Angeles. Los Angeles was big, 1972, August, September 1972. It was already a big householder community there. Many devotees, many men, many women, many brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, many children. So his previous servant, he had become attached to one female there in New Dwarka, and he met her in the kitchen. In the deity kitchen in New Dwarka. So as soon as we got to New Dwarka, Prabhupada had Kurunda arrange that I cook for him in my quarters, that I wouldn't go into the kitchen. And he said to me, don't go into the kitchen. That's what he said to me. He wanted to protect me. He said, don't go into the temple kitchen. He said, we arranged in my room. A complete kitchen was there. Right on, just like in India, a little two-burner stove right on the floor. And I made a little shelf. I helped make it a little shelf with some blocks, cinder blocks holding it up so I could cut things. And just had a little rowing station for chapatis like that. So anyway, that was the instruction there in New Dwarka. But each day he would just give me a little bit. The very first day was in Pittsburgh. And I was very worried about massaging Prabhupada because I had seen it happen, and of course I didn't know how to do it, and it seemed like it was very intricate activity. And the first day I got to watch Sudama Maharaj do it. So that was good. Sudama's there, so I figured, oh, he'll massage Prabhupada while he's here, you know. And I figured I just could maybe postpone it forever, that I wouldn't have to massage him because I was afraid of it. When I was Kirtanananda's servant and we were traveling in his van, one day after his lecture tour, Kirtanananda always saw that I was going to be Prabhupada's servant. That's why he put me in the kitchen in New Vrindavan to learn how to cook. Like, he wanted to make an arrangement. As he said, when I became Prabhupada's servant, he said, now I have someone on the inside. He gave me, when I left New Vrindavan, Kirtananda gave me a picture of Radha Vrindavan Chandra in a frame. He said, you put this on Prabhupada's desk wherever he goes. He said, and sometimes you say to Prabhupada, you want to go to New Vrindavan? So he's always trying to get Prabhupada to come to New Vrindavan and remember Radha Vrindavan Chandra. So I was the inside man. I was the insider. So anyway, Sudama was doing massage the first day, and Kirtananda one day, while I was his servant, he said, So would you like to give me a massage? And I just looked at him and went, I just couldn't imagine touching another guy, you know, another man. It was just, I guess I had difficulties at the time. I just didn't want to do it. So I just said, no, I don't know how, and I don't want to learn. So, but now I thought, whoops, I should have learned maybe how to give massage. So Sudama did it that day, and I was trying to watch. I was taking mental notes, rubbing the head. So then massage, and I didn't cook for him that day. When I went to Dallas the next day, Prabhupada started showing me how to cook, but that day I didn't have to cook. Basically, I was just there, and I was sitting in what was Prabhupada's bedroom there in Pittsburgh during the day while Prabhupada was in his sitting room. So the only instruction I was given as Prabhupada's servant was, when the bell rings, answer it. That was it. That's all I knew how to do is to be Prabhupada's servant. They told me, when the bell rings, go in his room. So it was about 3 p.m, and I hear this ding, 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 ding. So I got up and I ran into the room and offered obeisances and sat up. And I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, oh, he said, nothing. He said, I just wanted to see how quick you were. So it was putting me at ease as well. This is one thing, because I wasn't. And it's always what Prabhupada did when someone would come before him, is he would get you to relax. Because it was very difficult. We were in front of, you know, Prabhupada was everything. He was the emissary from the spiritual world. He was a completely transcendental spiritual personality. And you're sitting in front of him. And the first thing that happens day after day after day is you can't think, you can't talk, you can't do anything. You just sit there and look at him in, as we say, in awe and reverence. So from a platform of awe and reverence, neither can you do any service. You're just basically useless. So we want to serve. Our interest was to serve. So Prabhupada, very, very quickly, I became actually at ease very quickly around Prabhupada. He was so nice. And he was so nice to me. And so kind. And again, compassionate and merciful with how he showed me how to do everything. It was just very nice. So that was first instruction. So then I looked, I said, anything else? No, that's all. He said, you can go back. So I went back to my room. So then we were headed towards, this is all building up, this is 1972. September.